everyone, and welcome to Snake Oilers, the wholly sponsored risky business podcast where vendors pay us to come along and pitch their wares to you, the listeners. My name's Patrick Gray. And yeah, we've got three vendors pitching for your business today. We'll be hearing from Rapid7. They'll be talking about the latest improvements to their product, Insight IDR. We'll also hear from F5 Networks. F5's acquisition of Nginx has closed, and their strategy seems to be Nginx everywhere. Fire it up as a sidecar, a server, a container, an app platform. Just go nuts. That seems to be the thinking. And we will hear from those two vendors shortly. But first up, I want to kick things off with a vendor who I think will get a pretty good response from this podcast, StrongDM. And yeah, StrongDM has what I think is a really interesting product. So I'm guessing a lot of you out there in listener land get a little nervous sometimes when pondering the sheer level of VPN access that users have into your production environments. And I mean, it is to a degree kind of unavoidable, isn't it, right? Engineers need access to like Kubernetes clusters and SQL servers. And it's not just the engineers who occasionally need access to your production environment. I mean, even marketing teams need that, all your developers, that sort of thing. So what you often wind up with is hundreds of staff with raw VPN access into your production environments. And that means you're one compromised endpoint away from having an attacker in there as well, let alone having a staff member just, phished. And maybe you're using two-factor, but attackers have gotten pretty good lately at doing real-time OTP pass-through attacks these days. So I guess the question is this situation helping you get more sleep, or is it keeping you awake a little bit? And I'm going to guess that it's the latter. So enter StrongDM. Their whole thing is designed to solve this problem. Instead of just dropping everyone onto the production system network by way of a VPN, you can use StrongDM's product to provision just what's needed. And it's not some traditional ACL type of thing where people just get IP access to what they need. It's much more granular than that. They make a type of, I guess you call it a protocol-aware proxy. You run their agent on your workstation, you sign in with SSO, and then magically it makes the services you need appear to you on localhost. Now, this means developers, engineers, marketers, whoever, they can access the stuff they need without actually having to access the production network itself via a VPN. And because you've got a central choke point for all of this activity, you have a beautiful, orderly audit log to go along with it. Ah, sleeping better already. So yeah, the usual caveats apply though. I'm not a practitioner, so I haven't played with this product myself, so I can't tell you if it's amazing. But I can tell you that based on the conversation you're about to hear, I think StrongDM's product sounds like a bloody good idea and definitely worth looking into if your VPN access is a bit out of control. I spoke with the company's co-founder and CTO, Justin McCarthy, about what StrongDM does, and here's what he had to say.
What we have is an identity-aware, protocol-comprehending proxy for all of those back-end infrastructure systems where, web interface is not enough. So if the whole world were a CRM and the only kind of user was a sales team user, then we wouldn't exist. But certainly I know every job I've showed up for, I've needed more than just a web page to do my technical work. I've always needed a database. I've always needed a cluster of some type. I've always needed servers of some type to do my work. And that's really the scope of our product.
So, so how does StrongDM actually assist with that?
Sure. So sometimes we call it a first mile access control solution. So this is from the point of view of my workstation as a user. I need to get into a database to interact with some data. I might need to get into a server to deploy some code. I might need to access a Kubernetes cluster. All of these entry points today have different identity regimes. And even if you've gone through the effort to, for example, like bind your MySQL database to LDAP, which while technically possible is rarely actually done.
I'm sure most listeners would rather pinch themselves until they bleed than actually do that, but please continue.
So for every one of these systems that we integrate with, it's technically maybe possible, but in practice, never done. And so what StrongDM does, because we act as a proxy, We get to take that zero trust architecture of establishing your identity locally through your single sign-on and through multi-factor locally on your workstation. And then you get to carry that identity with you as you access the Kubernetes cluster or access a Linux host that you're SSHing to or access a Postgres database that you're querying.
Yeah. Now, the way that this works from, say, you're a developer and you need SQL access, instead of pointing, you know, your application at the actual SQL database, you point it at your sort of protocol proxy, right?
Yeah, that's right. So you log in on your workstation, and then everything, instead of having DNS entries, essentially everything that you need access to do your job according to your role just appears the moment you authenticate. And it appears using logical names. So I might, in my role as a data scientist, have access to, you know, the product catalog and the transactions database or something like that. Those two services would appear, and actually they would appear on the loopback interface locally to me. And then I would point my Python code at it, or I would point my interactive query window at it. And then maybe I need to SSH into the cluster that's running my Spark job or something like that. I would similarly be able to invoke an SSH command locally and just be instantly get into the target system.
And of course, this necessitates users to run your agent on their endpoint, right? Like on their client.
Yeah, on their workstation, that's true. Just like you would, an analogy is a VPN client. So just like you would need to start up a VPN client today to get access into a trusted network segment, you can actually sort of set that aside and just turn on the StrongDM client instead, because it's going to be focused and targeted and will only permit that in protocol traffic for the two or three or four things that you actually need to get your job done.
So like, how do you go about assigning the permissions and the roles and all of that stuff? How does that work?
Our customers deploy it in quite a few different ways. One way that we talk about it internally is just as we think of infrastructure as code as being possible in the modern era, our product strives to deliver access as code. So for example, if you do have a policy that you want to enforce that's related to some group definition in your single sign-on, and you want that to manifest in terms of, you know, all the way through to the Microsoft SQL Server account permissions, we can help achieve that. Similarly, if you might have multiple role definitions in your Kubernetes cluster, and if you want to help map those all the way through from your single sign-on system, we can achieve that as well. So it's really about binding those identity properties that are part of your organization and part of your OU in the case of like Active Directory or something like that, binding it all the way through to some of the grant permissions that are native in the target system. Of course, because we support so many types of systems, each one is a little bit different. The way you express a permission in a Windows host for a remote desktop destination is a little bit different from how you would express a permission in Postgres. And then we even mix in protocols like Redis that have essentially no permissions definitions at the granular level. But at the end of it, we try to create a unified plane where you can describe sort of all of those as this is what an engineer is in our organization, or this is what a data scientist is in our organization. And then getting me as an end user to be a data scientist is one gesture.
Yeah.
And then all of those permissions are inherited as a result.
Now, okay, so say I start sending, you know, SQL queries via your client, your agent. I'm guessing that you like SSH wrap that or something, right? To your proxy, so that's not going in the clear.
Yeah, of course. So because we have the advantage of having a deployed API that coordinates all of this, we can do key distribution essentially centrally, right? And then this federation of agents on the workstations as well as the proxies all coordinate their trust expectations through the central hub. So what that means is when we hop from a client through to the first hop proxy, we know it's not just a matter of trusting a CA, for example. All of that traffic is encapsulated inside of a TLS connection.
Yeah, okay.
That has the exact cert for that moment to expect for that dial to that proxy.
So that falls into the category of I'm glad you asked, right? It appears you've put some work into that. Excellent. So I presume the proxy itself, it actually sits somewhere inside your production environment, right?
Yeah, so every customer chooses according to their network topology exactly how many instances of the proxy to deploy where. So like a common example would be You might have, let's say, an EU set of data centers, and you might have a US set of data centers. And you might determine for your high availability needs that you want to deploy a pair in each of those geographic locations. And then what happens is we have our own essentially routing protocol built into the system so that from the client's point of view, it doesn't need to necessarily know about how to get to the EU versus the US. The system's going to compute the optimal path.
Yeah, okay. Can you sort of mix and match between, say you've got one instance of StrongDM running near your SQL box, but, you know, you also want to be able to access this cluster, which is somewhere else. That's going to require another instance of StrongDM, but can you get your client to speak to both easily at once,
Absolutely. The way to imagine it is if you're a data scientist or an engineer or an analyst sitting in finance or something, and you want to see a list of logical named things in front of you, I got to get to this database, I got to get this cluster in this database. You, as an end user, you don't care where those are hosted. So it's very common for our deployed customers to have some servers in AWS, some servers in Google, and then some servers in a legacy data center. All of those are unified into essentially one listing, one logical named listing for the user, and the user doesn't need to care.
Now, look, I know you don't market it this way, and I'm probably going to put this in the intro. So by the time you hear this, dear listeners, I've probably already said it, but you don't market this as being an alternative for a VPN, right? But this does sound like a good way to avoid having every single engineer in your organization, every single marketing person who needs to compile lists from very sensitive database. Like, this seems like a good way to avoid having just crazy network level access into sensitive production environments. I mean, that seems to be something that this would be good at.
I'm glad you were able to identify that. I would certainly say that, if your use case is, you know, really to do my job, I just need access to this one thing to get some queries out. I just need access to this one, SSH host, and this one database. That's exactly, our product will allow you to essentially stop provisioning VPN users and stop thinking about what network segment. And simultaneously, because we are, because everything is audited, you'll be able to show in protocol traffic and nothing out of protocol accessed only the intended systems, and you'll be able to say that with precision.
Now, you can also have administrators who can enable time locked access, right? So if someone says, hey, I need to get into this database to make these changes, you can then provision them, okay, here you go, you've got an hour. And then your permission will automatically roll back into that like less powerful group. Yeah.
Absolutely. And this is very common for customers that have, there's some sort of a production ticket. There's some sort of a customer ticket. There's a reason why I need to be able to do my job to get into that sensitive system, but I shouldn't have enduring access. You know, this is to handle one incident. I'm going to have access. There's going to be a full audit transcript. In the case of SSH, it's going to be every command I type. In the case of a Kubernetes exec, it's going to be everything I did interactively with that inside of that pod. And that's going to be attached to that session, basically. Yeah, so temporary access is a big use case for us.
I'm curious, though. I just got to ask before we wrap this up. You know, you said to me before we started recording, you said to me, oh, we don't market it as a substitute for a VPN. But for most users, like, that's what it's going to be, right? Like, that. I mean, that seems to be like a pretty strong case for using this.
I think you have to come to it, though. You have to experience it and then feel it and then come to that realization. So you don't know that you're annoyed by your VPN until you see that there is an alternative.
And then, once you
feel it, then you start the project plan to turn it down for sure.
Turn it down. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the thing, right? It's not about getting rid of it. It's about maybe not having, 500 people have access to it. Okay. Justin McCarthy, StrongDM. That was all really interesting stuff. Anyone who's interested in taking a look at this, they can head over to StrongDM's website. I already had a look before I recorded this interview, and unusually and awesomely, your pricing is actually available on your website. So that's nice. Do you do free trials as well? I got to ask.
Yeah, of course we do. Just head right over. You can sign up and you can kick the tires today.
Yeah, and the pricing, I got to say, not too bad, right? So head over to StrongDM, take a look. And Justin McCarthy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Patrick.
That was Justin McCarthy of StrongDM there. Big thanks to him for that. And you can check them out at StrongDM.com. snakeoilers.com. And I can imagine quite a few of you listening will probably be doing that because it actually sounds pretty useful. Okay, our next snake oiler this week is Rapid7. Rapid7 makes a bunch of security software, everything from SIEM automation to vuln scanning to web app scanners and so on and so on. And today we're speaking with Rapid7's very own Nicholas Davis, their senior technical product manager for InsightIDR. And of course, the topic is going to be InsightIDR. Now, you know, you've got a lot of EDR plays out there, and InsightIDR is kind of one of them. There is an endpoint agent. But as you're about to hear, these days, Rapid7 is talking about InsightIDR more in terms of it being a holistic solution, not just an endpoint detection and response tech, more like a full cloud SIEM. We last spoke to Rapid7 about InsightIDR in June last year. And the company has made some changes since then. So Nicholas, join me to tell us what they are, and here's what he had to say.
It's come a long way in the last few years. You know, I think in general, with this solution, we really are focused on the security operations use case from a SIEM perspective. We are focused on threat detection and response. I think our ability to collect, analyze, ingest data from all sorts of different sources has only gotten better over time. And we're really kind of starting to focus as well on what I would call the modern network, right? When you move into AWS and Azure workloads, what does behavioral analytics look like there? What is normal versus suspicious, malicious, anomalous? And how can we help give visibility and detection use cases there? Additionally, I would add that we are really trying to focus very hard on response, right? Whether it's containment, response, case management, et cetera, we really want to make sure that we can help these security teams close the loop on their incidents, get better, get faster, evolve over time as well.
Well, it's interesting because it sounds like what you're saying is your endpoint detection and response, which, I mean, you've always called it incident detection and response. That makes more sense now because it seems like you're kind of de-emphasizing the endpoint aspect to this. Is that a fair characterization?
You know, I think the endpoint is still a really strong piece of the story, right? I think, you know, when you think about it, there are probably three pillars here, which is log data, of course, which is the classical SIEM use case always. Endpoint information and endpoint data and telemetry, which is something that more modern players have been moving into, Rapid7 obviously included. And finally, you know, there's the networking component as well. We are looking at those three holistically. We want to provide detection and response at the endpoint, in the log data, in the network, going forward to really help push that out. You know, I think our SOAR technology through our acquisition of Command has helped incredibly in this story. We're looking forward to further updates from a network monitoring perspective as well, with the acquisition of our NetFort team. And so, you know, there's just lots of things happening around Rapid7 these days.
So look, you mentioned that it's very much about the SIEM case and the operations case, right? And that you're working on, I guess, automating a lot and working on workflows and what have you. Can you give us some examples of what that actually looks like in an applied context? Because, you know, quite often we have people on here and they're like, yeah, we accelerate incident response. And you're like, okay, cool. Give us an example. So give us an example.
Absolutely. I would love to dive into the meat with you. You know, I think we see a lot of different attacks and attackers across our software customers, as well as our managed service and our threat intelligence team. I think something that is really, really common is initial compromise through something like Office 365, right? Happens all the time. You see a suspicious login event from a country that the user has never authenticated from before. We picked it up with our behavioral analytics, but typically they'll find their way onto an endpoint and they'll drop a payload of some kind, right? We typically see things like malicious documents being used all the time for these purposes. And so we'll detect that again with our Insight agent. And from there, the response capabilities start to kick in, right? You can kill that process using that agent. You can contain that and isolate that host if you'd rather, also using our agent. Or you can orchestrate out across your other tools. Maybe you are also a Carbon Black customer. Maybe you want to lock down those credentials in Active Directory, in your SSO provider, wherever that might be. And so we want to provide the tools to allow you to do that both natively with our technology, as well as with whatever else is in your security stack through our orchestration and automation engine.
So it's about the ability to actually have some control when you're responding instead of having to run around, which level is that computer on? Where do I find the person? Like that seems to be the
Absolutely.
Idea here. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, look, this is an asymmetrical warfare. It always has been, right? The attacker can move more nimbly and quicker than you can because you have a more complex environment to protect. And whatever we can do to force multiply and make that more efficient for these analysts and for these responders is what we'd like to do. And so that's a lot of what we've been working on lately with Insight IDR.
So Insight IDR, like what percentage of your customers who buy Insight IDR are sort of buying that as part of a more complete suite from you? Like do they, is it often selected as a point solution or is it usually something that's picked up as part of a bigger package?
We see a lot of both. We see a lot of customers who are coming in looking for a detection response offering, looking for a SIM, whether it's for compliance or further advanced security use cases. But obviously, we also have other great solutions, right? Our vulnerability management is best in class. And so we have a lot of customers who buy both of those solutions or include application security and IT ops. You know, it's
I'm just going to cut you off there to actually give you a compliment, which is I think that, Rapid7's decision to unify the vulnerability scanning, endpoint agent with the IDR agent is, you know, it's very clever because there's too many conflicts between agents and there are just generally too many enterprise agents. And it's also something that, you know, CrowdStrike can't do that because they're not in vuln scanning. And, Carbon Black can't do that because they're not in vuln scanning. And has that been a big driver of sales? Have you picked up a lot of IDR customers who were previously just, vuln scanning customers?
Yeah, we definitely see a healthy adoption across our solutions. It's definitely part of our strategy. You know, I think in general, our mission is to lower the barrier to entry for good security, right? And we can do that through a number of different means. Insight IDR is one of the fastest to deploy SIMs out there on the market today. And that is only reinforced by the fact that we allow a 30-day free trial that customers actually get value out of. Additionally, to your point, right, our Insight agent has multiple workloads. And so that there's another lower barrier to entry. Instead of having to install, manage, maintain multiple different agents that bloat across systems. If you have it installed already, you can activate these other use cases over time as you see fit. And so it's all part of making the security operations team and the vulnerability management teams more efficient.
You haven't tried to move into the desktop AV space though, which a lot of the other sort of EDR people have. Do you have any plans to change that or are you just focusing on making your agent play nicely with, other AV scanners out there?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. I have nothing to add on that question today, but I do think that our endpoint agent does catch quite a lot of malicious activity as it is today, be it malicious files or, processes, or more advanced capabilities that rely on registry keys or command line arguments, obfuscated code, et cetera. And so, yes, we are not desktop AV today. I don't personally have any plans for that right now, but again, the future is uncertain, always will be. What we're focused on primarily really is making that detection response use case, making that security operations team more effective, more efficient, and more capable of dealing with this asymmetrical attacker.
Now, you did mention that 30-day free trial. I mean, I can imagine there would have been some CISOs out there who would have scoffed at the idea that they could get anything up and running in 30 days to actually see how it would work. And yet you say you can actually deliver some sort of value there. I mean, in what context are you able to deliver value in such a short period of time? Is that just rolling it out maybe to a small group of computers to see how that goes? Or what does that look like?
No, I'm really talking about coverage of the environment. I think we see customers deploying this solution in hours or days instead of weeks and months. And I know it's hard to believe. And to the people listening to your podcast, I would say, don't take my word for it. Try it for yourself. And you can verify or not that I'm telling you something accurate. Patrick, I'm sure you know this. We have the ability to spin out free trials on our website for free. You can go to rapid7.com/snakeoilers and check it out for yourself. But we are really seeing visibility. I think one of the stories that I hear super often from the front lines is a customer will deploy out Insight IDR from collectors and connect it to their environment, which might be just simply DHCP, AD, maybe Office 365, a couple other things, and instantly start to detect compromise that may have been in the environment for weeks, if not months or years. This is something that happens regularly. And so, it really is getting a level of visibility that people aren't accustomed to getting that quickly. And something we really pride ourselves in.
So I guess what you're saying is people should just plug in the easy stuff
absolutely.
And take it for a while.
Absolutely, 100%. And, if that works well for you, you should take it a step further. Deploy out that agent. It's really easy. It works across a lot of different operating systems. See what you can get there. Again, our automation capabilities are really amazing as well. And in fact, for those compliance focused out of you out there, we also recently introduced file integrity monitoring as a part of that agent, as a part of InsideER, to help you meet those needs, right? So again, another lower barrier to entry, which is if you already have this agent installed for detection and response, why not use it for compliance as well?
Yeah, it's funny, right? It's like everything that host-based intrusion detection agents were trying to be in the early 2000s is like, it only took 20 years, but it looks like they're getting there.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe, but I think we are finally making some progress in this space. And it's super exciting for me, and hopefully it's exciting for the security practitioners out there listening to this. I think, you know, we're getting to a place, and you've said it yourself in your own podcast, where a lot of the different tools out there in the market really do provide a lot of value, which wasn't always the case in the security game. And so it's an exciting time to be in the industry for sure.
Well, Nicholas Davis, thank you very much for joining us. It's great to hear you speak so enthusiastically about the product that you are responsible for. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you so much, Patrick. It's been great.
That was Nicholas Davis of Rapid7 there. Big thanks to him for that. And as he said, you can hit their special link, rapid7.com/snakeoilers, for a free 30-day trial of their SIEM solution. Okay, our third and final snake oiler this week is F5 Networks. And F5 is going through a bit of a transformation at the moment. They just splashed out $500 million on Nginx recently. The transaction closed in May, and F5 is now trying to move to an updated business model. You know, traditionally, they've been best known for their load balancers, SSL terminators, stuff like that. And of course, they had WAF modules for their beastly gear. But now they're trying to position themselves as the company that will support secure web app deployment like any way you'd like to deploy, because it is a cloud world these days, as we all know. Preston Hogue is F5's Director of Security Marketing, and he joined me to talk through their new thinking, and here's what he had to say.
Well, I think the key thing to look at is with applications today, we have modern applications that we can start to look shift left, and we're in containers. And then we also still have, you know, legacy type of applications. Many of our customers today have an array of both of these different types of applications or somewhere in between. And so what Nginx gives us is ultimately additional insertion points. And so those insertion points are no longer just the proxy that we've historically had, but now we have an app server, a web server, an ingress controller. You know, we also have an API gateway, a sidecar to a container, and also a container. Each of these different locations are now insertion points for adding additional application services such as application security.
So I guess the idea here is you just want to be able to be deployed in any way anyone can imagine.
Well, the key thing is it's not just about the deployment, it's about ensuring that we can mitigate risk to applications, whether they are legacy or whether they are more now modern applications that we're seeing develop today.
So the acquisition only closed a short time ago, right? And where are you seeing, first of all, the take up now that it's an F5 product, and also where are you seeing the opportunities?
Well, I think the big thing is that customers realize that the requirements for a short tail app versus, you know, maybe an app that generates 50% of the revenue happen to be different. And we had customers that had used us in front of, you know, 5% of those primary key applications, those ones that are, you know, really driving the business. And then they may have 100 and some customers, thousands of these shorter tail applications. What we've seen already happen is customers really looking to us to be able to have visibility across their entire application landscape, which the acquisition of Nginx really enabled us to now do.
Yeah, I mean, F5 has traditionally been data center kit for big websites, right? Like you wouldn't find a small e-commerce shop selling candles, right? Like that was never going to be the F5 customer. It was always big enterprise out of the data center. So I guess what you're saying is it's those customers who want to start getting more uniform visibility into everything else by sticking with one vendor. I mean, is that the appeal?
The appeal is, you know, applications are truly driving business now today for our customers. And, you know, the challenge is many customers have different types of frameworks, many different, of course, types of business needs that are being realized through the development of these modern applications. And so they want a vendor who is not binding them specifically to one type of cloud or one type of on-premises versus on-premises type of environment, but rather they can be agnostic wherever those applications happen to live. And we happen to be one vendor that can pull together that entire application ecosystem, provide application services to all of those different types of application requirements.
You work in in a job that helps you to understand threats, right? So to what extent is the threat landscape kind of driving development with some of these newer products, right? Like what are the problems, the specific sort of threat challenges that you look at and say, we can fix that by doing X, Y, Z?
Yeah, so I think the key element is that if you look across, as I talked about the insertion points in applications, that we are specifically looking at application threats. There's a huge amount of vendors out there that continue to talk about threat intelligence, but we have a very specific focus charter. And so as we look at API gateways, there's all kinds of new ways that API gateways are being compromised. Or even if you look at a Kubernetes environment and container types environments, we are now seeing all kinds of new vulnerabilities and exploits to those respective types of environments. Or traditional OWASP top 10, threats that we see that are targeting, whether it be cross-site scripting or cross-site request forgery, or even business logic attacks that are very unique to an application. And let's think about business logic flaws as an example. When there's technology in that historically we're now seeing verticals that are operationalizing their business processes with applications. Business processes that we never imagined being an application and are being compromised in very unique ways. Whether that's taking you could look at as a social media platform that also happens to have a direct marketing engine in it, being utilized in unique ways to influence the way that political campaigns, come about. Or if you start to see, whether it be energy sector or financial sector or Fed sector, all of these businesses are realizing the benefits of applications and are transitioning business processes to those applications. And so from our perspective, it's not just looking at the application threats that we would traditionally look at those OWASP top 10, but we're also working with our customers to transition their applications or their business processes to applications and thinking about risks that haven't yet been realized.
Well, and I guess the advantage of having, I know you'd love the terminology insertion point, right? I guess that makes sense as nomenclature, but the thing that is handy there is you can sort of get different types of visibility on different types of things, can't you? I mean, it would be much more heavily customizable than some sort of CDN with a security function or some sort of inline, cloud WAF.
Absolutely. And I think the foundation is understanding your applications. And so F5 is very heavily focused right now on being able to provide our customers a portfolio of being able to look across every single one of their applications and ultimately see how they're living.
You don't need to be seeing funny JavaScript, pop-up requests or whatever to know that maybe this API shouldn't be spitting out 2 gig an hour to one IP address in wherever, right?
Exactly. And, many times you go into a customer, and they're troubleshooting. And of course, they're going to the team, that is managing F5 because we're right in front of the application. But now today with those different types of insertion points, and the reason I mentioned that, just think about that. You're starting to look at all of these, from the code to customer, you're starting to look at what can happen at all of those different, whether it's at, like I said, the proxy or the web server, the app server, but each of those, it's literally like me telling you a message and doing telephone. And by the time it gets to the end, how many different times it's been translated, all the different kind of challenges that can exist there. We are really the foundation of how F5 is approaching this is making sure we provide our customers across whether it be public cloud or private cloud or on-premises and off-premises and all these different web frameworks and all of these different types of environments, We want to make sure our customers have that level of visibility. So when they start applying different types of application services, they can not only apply the right application service, but apply it in the right way that's associated to the context of that respective application environment.
It is. This is a very different approach to one that is becoming quite common, which is to say, you know, shunt all API requests through some sort of third-party cloud API security player, right? Like, that's what a lot of people are doing. This seems like a bit more of an old-school approach for the new world, if that makes sense. It's really for those companies that have dev and security teams who just want the tooling. I mean, is that a fair characterization, do you think?
Well, I'd say when we say old school, the old school element of security is you can't secure what you don't know. And that old school is always going to be in school.
Yes.
You know, and so, you know,
that's kind of what
saying,
I mean, right? Like this, you know, if you're a mega corporation, you're not just going to throw, oh, just proxy all API requests through this third party provider. And, you know, we'll just put a tick next to that box and not worry about it anymore. This is really, I'm guessing, going to be popular in those heavily regulated industries and, you know, the types of industries that tend to take security a bit more seriously.
Absolutely. When you start to look at FedGov, you start to look at FSI, you start to look at healthcare. You know, clearly this is beneficial, but it's beneficial for that startup company as well, where they're trying to move exceptionally fast in the things that they are introducing. They want to ensure that the competitors that they're quickly coming up on their heels, that they don't have that, you know, a negative implication to that application, which can have grave impact to their overall business. So even those non-regulated businesses that are starting to develop, you know, in pure container types of environments, it's all about context. Or you look at an ingress controller, or you look at, like I said, a sidecar. You need context to each of these different types of environments, ultimately to apply the correct application security. It's not just about developing the code and flaws that exist within that code, because now vulnerabilities exist. They can exist in the public cloud environment. They can exist in the container. They can exist ultimately anywhere within that application stack across from that code all the way to that customer. And we want to be able to provide them visibility first and foremost of that app, visibility to the threats and risk targeting that application, and then the ability to have the right context and policies to be able to deploy a policy configuration that's appropriate. And what I mean by that is, Paul, there's going to be, I was talking to a customer yesterday, and they were talking about how they have to actually spend dollars on a Cobalt developer because they have a legacy app that they're going to need for that. They said the next 10 years, they're never going to touch that application. How you apply application security to that type of environment is distinctly different to an environment that is doing, you know, six sprints a day that I wouldn't even say it's not a web application firewall that's protecting that. You're actually looking at each individual release, looking at the vulnerabilities that exist in that release and adding application protection capabilities to that release to ensure that each individual release is secure. Those are completely different. They both application security challenges, but how you address them is distinctly different based on a modern app versus an old school legacy app.
And I guess, you know, your argument here is that you can actually at least have some uniformity in your tooling because it can be deployed in so many different ways.
Absolutely. But, you know, the new school element, though, is really looking at the dev tool chain and making sure that we can incorporate and integrate within that dev tool chain. You know, it's like an environment I currently support myself where I'm leveraging F5 as a customer. I have my own application. F5 Labs is its own dedicated application. We happen to be having a dedicated dev tool chain, right? I'm able to release, you know, I do 2-week sprints, you know, for that particular application. But in that environment, I'm leveraging a public cloud provider. I'm leveraging our actual own Silverline for our managed service. We're leveraging, you know, a provider that's providing a actual market automation platform that's being done as a software as a service. We also, of course, have our own F5 IT. If something goes wrong within each of those particular environments, you know, the evolution of DevOps and now ChatOps is that we need to have not only being able to deploy an application policy, but being able to deploy an application policy for my own requirements requires our type of technology to be able to plug into the dev tool chain for more advanced functionalities, such as chat ops, which allows us to see alerts, you know, come into our our overall collaboration tools, but also the ability to spin up simple policies from that same type of collaboration environment. So those are the types of really innovative ways that we're making sure that we plug into the dev tool chain, that we ensure we have all these insertion points, and that we can see the application fluency, but then also be able to see risk across that entire ecosystem.
All right. Well, Preston Hoag, thank you very much for joining us to give us, I guess, you know, a bit of a macro vision for where F5 is looking to push Nginx now that it is an F5 company or an F5 product. It's really interesting, and I wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you, Patrick. Really enjoyed the time with you.
That was Preston Hoag of F5 Networks there. Big thanks to him for that. And you can find them, of course, at F5.com. And that is it for this edition of Snake Oilers. I'm off on break for a little while after this, so there will be no podcasts next week, but we will be back the week after that. I do hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Snake Oilers podcast. And until next time, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.